Hey everyone, today's episode is from my free weekly training that I host every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. That's California time. And we talk about learning to love what you do, everything that you do, and the difference between motivation and inspiration. Please join me every Friday and please email me at david@dmeltzer.com to share the training with your network, family, and friends.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Welcome everyone to the road to revenue. Welcome, 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 welcome. Kevin, welcome everybody. I'm so excited for this. We have so many people that have responded and registered and come through. Thank you so much for joining. This is one of my favorite topics because I'm one of the few people that don't feel guilty about making money even during this time. That's because money comes through me for others. And I want to talk about the road to revenue and learning to love what you do. One of the biggest mistakes people make, biggest mistakes people make is they think that everyone or people that are successful love what they do. Athletes, celebrities, entertainers, they must love what they do. The truth is that most people love some parts of what they do. So what we need to learn is to love the parts of what we're not doing. So I'm going to give some key distinctions to help people pragmatically be inspired by what they're doing, to be excited about what they're doing, to not allow things they can't control, things that are uncertain, to control their happiness while they're doing something. Because if you are inspired and happy while you're doing something, if you love what you're doing, you will do it better. You will consistently do it. You will persistently do it without quit. You will have statistical success in doing efficiencies in doing it. You'll have effectiveness in doing it. You'll carry the right energy while you're doing it. You'll attract more of what you're doing, all because you learn how to love the parts of what you're doing that you don't naturally love. In fact, you can actually hate it. Sometimes what we hate is easier to love because they're so closely connected. So what's the first step in learning to love what you do? Is first acknowledging what you don't like or don't love about what you're doing, right? Acknowledge it. And then what we have to do is learn from it. So once we acknowledge that, gosh, you know, I really don't like this part of my activity that I get paid for. And I don't like the person that sits next to me. I sit here, I feel like I'm doing the same thing every day. Whatever the things are that you don't love about what you do, then we can fix it. And how do we fix it? What we do is we find light, love, and lessons in what we're doing. And so we look to the fact, you know, I'll take something that I've done, taking the trash out. A lot of you may have heard this story, but it's applicable to so much. I hated taking the trash out. And the reason is I grew up with six kids. And for some reason, the natural selection order of who takes out the trash was always me. And the thing about the negative energy of not loving to take the trash out is that every time I took the trash out, because I had the wrong energy, because I had the wrong attitude, that trash was my nemesis. It spilled on me when it could. It cut me when it could. It's, you know, always took more time because I threw it, or it just was a complete mess. And then I went to college and I thought, okay, my trash karma is over. I'm going to, you know, not have to deal with this. And sure enough, being the youngest one and smallest one in my fraternity, they made me take the trash out. And if you think six kids of trash is nasty, try the trash at a fraternity house. Then I got married, had kids, all girls. Once again, I was the trash man. This is where I learned the lesson to learn to love what I do, because I looked at the trash differently and I said to myself, I'm going to acknowledge the fact, instead of wasting all this time, energy, and emotion and the fact that I hate taking the trash out, I'm going to acknowledge the fact that I hate it. But instead of not doing it, I'm going to find or learn to love doing it. So I looked at all the aspects of trash. I looked at the capabilities that I had that were synergistic and supplementary to the trash. And I said to myself, what aspects of the trash provide opportunities? What lessons are light? One thing I noticed about trash is it allowed me to leave situations, right? It allowed me to have time by myself. And once I realized that it had a capability of allowing me to escape and have time to myself, I knew exactly what I could do to maximize that type of capability. And that was to think about what I wanted. Ironically, thinking about what you want is part of a component about learning to love what you do, because you have to know your what in order to love anything, right? Most people get confused and think they have to know their why to love people. That's a complete fallacy. We already know our why. Our why is to help somebody or something. It's guaranteed. But what's your what? Most people are like, I don't have any clarity during this time, Dave. I don't know my what. I'm not enjoying this. I'm not. Find that what by looking at the capabilities that you have that are supplementary or synergistic to the thing that you don't like, right? The thing that you don't like. Think about the what. The what for me was revealed when I realized that taking the trash out was an escape and time to myself. And what do I want during that? I want to think about what makes me happy. Not everybody else, right? I allow everything to come through me. But what makes me happy? What is it? And all of a sudden, I found the light, the love, and the lessons in taking the trash out. And I started taking the trash out, not just at home, but at work, at friends' house. And everyone's attitude towards me changed as well. My wife loved me more. It was a symbol of that I cared about her when I just volunteered to take the trash out. Ironically, even in the end, one of my daughters, the 17-year-old, actually offered to take the trash out, and trash was like kryptonite to her. I learned to love what I do by knowing my what and applying my capabilities that are synergistic and supplementary to the capabilities of what I didn't like. And that makes a huge difference. So let me give you some key pragmatic distinctions on how to help all of you in this direction. Number one, the word work is indicative of not loving what you do, right? I love to work. Work is resistance, corrosion, interference. I love to work. No, we don't like to struggle or work. We love effortless. We love abundance. We don't love work. So let's define activity and take the word work out of our vocabulary. So from now on, let's have activity that you get paid for and activity that you don't get paid for. And now it gets easier to clarify capabilities that are synergistic or supplementary to activity I get paid for than to a resistant or a corrosion called work. And so now when I look at the activity I get paid for, I can learn to love the parts of the activity I get paid for that I may not love at this current time. And I can start distinguishing what can I do synergistic or supplementary to that in which I don't love. I'll give you another example. One of my favorite people is a guy named Marcellus Wiley. Played for the Chargers. He's been on SportsCenter as well as Fox Sports. Went to Columbia. Just an extraordinary guy. And I asked him about, you know, the invasion of privacy when you're a professional athlete and all the things that we give up as celebrities, athletes, and entertainers. What, you know, what is that effect on you? You know, people think even worse of all that corrosion that you have this enormous, like the best job in the world. People dream about having the same job with you. And he said, well, Dave, he said, I get paid for all of those things. I play for free. Right. In other words, he was saying, I love playing. Right. I don't have to get paid. It doesn't have to be activity I get paid for to play football on Sundays. But all those other things I don't love. But I've learned to love them because, number one, I learned to value what I can do through me with money. Right. My biggest motto is make a lot of money to help a lot of people have a lot of fun. So infusing value in the monetary process. People tell me I hate emails. And I said, what are you talking about? You hate emails. You don't hate emails. Nobody hates emails. No, I do. I said, really? I said, I can change you from hating emails and teach you to learn to love it in 2 seconds by transferring the value of emails. And I said, what does that mean? I said, well, what if I told you I'll pay you $1,000 for every email you send and $2,000 for every email you receive? I guarantee you start loving emails really quickly, won't you? right? You learn to love what you do because of the transference of value of what the emails mean to you. The same way I did with trash, that the value now was not the actual activity of being demeaned or allowing my ego to get in my way, that somehow I was lower or separate or inferior because I had to take the trash out. It now was something superior, something connected, that it gave me time to do something that most people can't afford to do. So through that activity of getting paid, we can then transfer the joy of what getting paid does to the activity that we may not enjoy. And so it's very critical that we take the time to do that. Now, how do we do that? We have to take inventory every day of those values that we talk about, right? Because if we don't take inventory of our values, it's very difficult to know our what. We need to look at what our personal values are each day, especially now with compressed uncertainty and exponential change. If we look at every day our personal values, our experiential values, which have changed dramatically, our giving values and receiving values, the perspective of whether, you know, playing professional football or taking the trash out changes. Because if my receiving values that are high that day and I receive $1,000 for taking the trash out, my values change. My joy, my love for what I'm doing changes. It now becomes an activity I get paid for, which is also a distinction, right? And so as we define things, you know, not with resistance, obstacles, and voids, but define things by the value in which we receive and therefore are able to give, because we can't give what we don't receive, we learn to love the activity in which we're doing. And what we want to do is maximize the amount of activity that we love. I love to make money because it allows me to help people. I love to shop for the right things, which makes me happy. So I try to maximize the activity I get paid for. That is an easy way to distinguish for me that I love what I do. I love sitting in a closet, you know, for an hour, being able to share my ideas, because my main mission in life is to empower others to be happy. And if I get 1,000 of you on here to empower another 1,000, to empower another 1,000, I can create a collective consciousness of happiness. So we need to make the distinguishment of activity, and we need to apply the value of that activity to that. So moreover, the next distinguishment that we need to make is to distinguish motivation from inspiration. And so if we can distinguish motivation from inspiration, thank you, Justin. If we can change motivation and understand the difference between motivation and inspiration. Number one, the best story I can tell. Motivation is like a tank full of jet fuel or gas, right? There's certain people out there that are motivators. Fear can motivate us, because what it does is it focuses us and allows us to have that catalytic event to get through something, to get started. That's all about motivation. But motivation is not going to get you there. Motivation, especially if it's caused by fear, is going to suck the energy right out of you. Motivation is a tank full of gas, and there's only so much in it. Inspiration is solar power. Super solar power, though. And only thing that gets in our way of inspiration are the clouds, right? And the clouds are like lessons. They're going to keep on coming and getting in the way and interfering with our superpower, right? Because we're always connected to the sun. We're always connected to the most powerful source of light, lessons, and love. And if we're going to learn to love what we do, we have to realize that we have the possibility, if not the probability, and it should be our perspective or our reality, that we are consistently inspired to love everything that we do, right? Am I happy 100% of the time? No. Am I happy more than I was yesterday time-wise? Absolutely. I'm on the consistent, persistent pursuit of my happiness, my potential. And I realize that I need motivation at times. It's a catalytic event, and sometimes fear causes that motivation. Sometimes I'm able to do it through meditation, activity, process, whatever it may be. But I always am inspired. I'm a superpower solar panel, and clouds are the lessons that I learn. And the faster that I learn, the clearer the connection will be to the sun. to the power, to the source, the life, the lessons and light, the love that I have in my life. In other words, I'll be happy more of the time. In other words, I will be loving my activity. Activity I get paid for and activity I don't get paid for. And the more I can maximize that, the more it can come through me with appreciation for others, and I can inspire others to do the same. I can light their light. The sun can come through me as a superpower. So I myself am like the Elon Musk home battery, except for the only difference is I don't just store the energy. I appreciate the energy. I take that energy, add value to it, and then give it to every single utility that's connected to me, everything and everyone that I'm connected to. And guess what? By doing that, I expand, I accelerate, and I grow, and I'm able to manifest or materialize everything I want by utilizing motivation as a catalyst and inspiration to get me there, right? Motivation will get you started. Inspiration will get you there. Inspiration will allow you to love what you do, the activity you get paid for, the activity that you don't get paid for. And so our job is to learn those lessons from the clouds. Not only learn the lessons from the clouds, because the clouds are going to keep on coming until you learn them. And they're going to result in rain and pain when you don't learn them, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual pain all the time until you get rid of those clouds. But you're going to forget about the clouds, and the same clouds are going to come. But here's the best thing about those clouds and the lessons. You have the power at all times to remember every lesson you've ever learned, even the ones you forgot, and even the ones you've never learned. Remember, connect to, reunify with, remember everything. And if we can distinguish activity we get paid for from activity we don't get paid for, if we can find the light, love, and lessons through the clouds, if we can take that source of energy and be the accelerated home battery that appreciates all the energy received and give it away, we're able to love not only more in which we do, but more in which we encounter, no matter what the outside circumstances are. Now, what are the controls that we have over the weather? Well, there's four things that we control over the weather. One, right, the mindset on the weather. What are we, or what we voting for the weather to be? So imagine that your mindset actually controls the weather. And we know that it, the more that we vote for it to be sunny, the more likely it's going to be sunny. The more we vote for it to be rainy, the more likely it will be to be rainy. But there's cool thing about it is we're the only ones that control our mindset. We bring certainty by knowing what we want. So make sure that you're voting, that you're controlling the weather that you want. So if you're not controlling the weather and you're not learning to love what you do and you're not in the activity that you want to be and getting the results and the emotional effect of it, then go ahead and stop for a minute and start voting for what you want the weather to be. The second thing that we can do and we control is the way we feel about the weather. Right? Why is it, you know, if it's raining, why is it I hate the rain? Especially when it's activity that we get paid for, right? Why do you have to not like a certain activity? So find what you do like about that activity. And it may be the mere fact that you're paid for it. And so if you're not connecting the dots, then go ahead and think to yourself, wait a second, because I'm paid to do this, I'm able to put my child into piano lessons. And someday she may be able to pursue her potential as a pianist, and she loves the piano innately, quantumly, more than any. This is all we're doing. We're, instead of disconnecting and separating and using the ego to create more inferiority and superiority, more dislike, we can utilize the same mechanism in order to find and learn to love it. And that's what we want to do. And so we'll use our mindset that we control. We control the weather, and we control what we think of the weather with our feelings, what we feel about the weather. I love the rain. It brings good luck. Do you know how many times I said that this week? It's been raining here in Southern California, and my poor 10-year-old stuck on the couch, and I keep telling him, man, I love the rain. It brings good chi. It brings good luck. Really? Yeah, really. That's the way I feel about it. That's what I vote for. And guess what? I'm going to vote for the sun to come also. And I'm going to look and learn to love the sun and the sunshine the same way I look to love and learn to love the rain. Now, the third thing, as you see through that example too, that I control is what I say and what I hear. never more important than right now to say the right things to people like I did to my son, but also to listen. Seek what you want to hear. Don't let negative energy, negative ideas, and negative people inundate you. It's much easier now than ever to allow those people, ideas to inundate you. Go seek what you want. Seek the person that you should sit next to. Seek the people that you have dinner with. Seek the information that you want off the internet. Seek it. You control the weather. You control the way you feel about the weather. And you also control the way that you explain and listen to the weather. You control the clouds and your perspective of how much you love the activity you get paid for. And we can clear and receive more sunlight and share that light to others. We are the superpowered, solar-powered battery that appreciates, unlike none other. And if you aggregate all of those things that I talked about that we control, if you aggregate your mindset, your feelings, and what you say and what you hear, you can do things differently, right? And we know one thing about doing things. Motion, movement starts all. The biggest problem that most people have right now is they're not doing anything. So you can use your routine or an adaptable routine in order to get things done, right? Use a routine or adaptable routine. So wake up the same time every day. One of the biggest challenges I have with my business being remote is getting people to wake up at the same time. It's so crucial. I live my entire life, and I think it's attributable to learning to love what I do because I'm excited about it. I live my whole life all day with one objective tomorrow. The key objective in mind while I live my life today, my actions are so that I can make sure that I start tomorrow at 4 a.m. I start tomorrow at 4 a.m. I start at the highest frequency that I can, right? I want to plateau and grow. And I know in order to do that, I can utilize time and math to accelerate the production, accessibility, and gratitude that I have. The three lenses that allow me to love what I do, allow me to get the most out of the sun, to become the supercharger battery that I am. And I utilize that perspective of time from 4 a.m. on to know, number one, that I only get one action a day. I get that first action at the highest frequency, which is my baseline to love what I do, the highest frequency. Most people live their life rolling a boulder uphill all day like the myth of Sisyphus, just for it to roll down so they wake up in the morning at the same spot. You need to learn to plateau and grow by learning to love what you do, by realizing that all day long, I'm getting rid of all these clouds. I'm getting clearer and clearer and more sunlight, more power. I'm storing more and more so that I can go and rest my embodiment and allow the boulder, not just maybe to stay in the same place, but actually maybe move up a little bit higher, because I've trained myself to study sleep and to clear more clouds when I'm sleeping than when I'm awake, because when I'm awake, my ego is even more penetrable, keep on voting for what I don't want, keep telling me I have a need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, all of these different things that create more clouds. At least I can stop creating more clouds when I'm sleeping. And if I can, what if I can clear more clouds? Well, it all starts by having a routine or an adaptable routine. But either way, whether you have a set routine of what you have planned, what you don't have planned for sleep, or you do it by values, an adaptable routine that you're going to spend a minimum of an hour a day on your health, a minimum of an hour a day with your family, a minimum of, you know, 10 minutes a day being a student, your calendar, whatever it may be, whichever one it may be, you better have the same starting point and you better be living your life to clear those clouds and to start your day at the same time, because it controls your mindset, the way you feel, what you say and what you hear. And most importantly, actually what you're going to do the next day. It's amazing when you think about how you want to think, feel, believe, how much changes with your actions. You can learn to love what you do. You have activity you get paid for, activity you don't get paid for. If you don't want to distinguish it by what you get paid for, then distinguish it by what's most valuable to you. I have activity that, you know, allows me to eat and activity that doesn't allow me to eat. I don't care. Put it into whatever context you want within the value system that you have, realizing that you don't have to balance all your values, that someday 90% of what you do should be to give, 90 other days 90% may be to receive, other days 90% will be experiences that you want to have. But if you're not taking inventory of your values and you not be able to distinguish the activity that you want in order to be happy and to make every activity somehow supplementary or synergistic to what you love. And it's all by the four things that you can control. And when we love what we do, you will make more money, help more people, and have more fun. When we love what we do, we find those void shortages and obstacles, and we can ask people to help us. What I found interesting in my own transformation is that I went from having people being gatekeepers, and I hear that a lot right now. Oh, there's a lot of gatekeepers. I can't get this person to do this. Everybody to me now is connected, right? I learned to love everyone and everything in the respect that I'm finding the light, love, and lessons and superpowers that I want in people, and I'm getting more of that. So what I want in people is to be my sponsor and power sponsor. What's a sponsor? It's somebody that knows somebody that can help me. Most people on average have 1,000 people now that can help me some way or another. What's a power sponsor? Somebody that can help me themselves and find somebody that can help me. I'm exponentially growing my network of people that are on a mission to empower others to be happy. I'm exponentially growing my mission to find people that can learn to love what they do so they can expand and accelerate to make more money, help more people, and have more fun. I'm expanding to find the people to understand that this is the time forced meditation. This is a time of forced meditation to stop. I was on with Marshall Falk yesterday, and that was the greatest lesson that I took from him is he has the same personality, me, activities, right? I'm not busy, I'm active, right? I'm available, accessible, but I'm active. And sometimes we get so active, we forget to meditate. Even those 20 minutes of meditation, one thing that I've learned is sometimes you have to slow it down. I found so many ego-based clouds that were in my way that were causing inefficiencies and effectiveness. And now I have even greater statistical success. I'm going to make more money by saving more money as well and creating more efficiencies in my life. Those efficiencies too are very important to learn to love what you do. I have a new 4-minute rule. I'm launching it on this training. I know some of you have learned, you know, 4 minutes. I always say, if I'm looking for 4 minutes to save, 4 minutes, if I save a day, is 24 hours of productivity a year. That's 3 full days of an average person's productivity or an above average person's productivity. And everyone here should look for 4 minutes. 4 minutes of productivity, 4 minutes of savings, 4 minutes of supplementary activity, whatever it is, 4 minutes of extended love. 4 minutes, anything you can do for 4 minutes is going to be 24 hours a year. 3 full days of productivity every year, right? I tell people all the time, 80 hours a year is spent looking for things. So if you're going to do anything during this time, let me give you 2 weeks of vacation back. Go put your phone, your wallet, and your keys in the same place, and you'll save 80 hours a year. I just gave you 2 weeks vacation. So at minimum, everyone should have the focus. If you want to learn to love what you do, have activity you get paid for or don't get paid for, learn to understand the difference between motivation and inspiration, find 4 more minutes, and you can enjoy all of that even more. All right, first half of training's over. I appreciate everyone so much. Let's get to the good stuff, not me telling you what I think you want to know. Let me answer the questions so I know what you really want to know. Go ahead. First question coming at me. How are we going to do this, Justin? Just go... Q&A, anyone? Got like 300 chats. I guess I'm pulling them off here. All right. Is Cash and Carrie? Yes, Cash is the green card, gold card, platinum card, and black card of the currency of energy that you put into the flow to get what you want. If you buy the right things with your currency, you'll be happy. If you buy the wrong things, you won't. Money will not buy you love or happiness. But shopping will, as long as you shop for the right things. Questions here, am I looking down, trying to find, there's so many, I apologize. Does anyone know about becoming a notary online? That's a good one. thank you, let me see. Justin, how am I getting questions here? I apologize, there's a...
Just poems here from the chat, Dave.
There's 400 in the chat, Mike, so I'm having problems. Can you tell us about your experience in working with Steve Jobs? How did you get that opportunity to work with the group? All right, so I was blessed yesterday to have John Sculley on. He was the CEO of Apple Pepsi. The one thing I learned from John Sculley was zoom in and zoom out, which is a philosophy of Steve Jobs. I was blessed to work with him when I was CEO of the world's first smartphone. I had the world's first Windows CE device with Microsoft, and being up there in the Silicon Valley very early, looking at what Apple was doing in the creative space with arts and teachers in the 90s, I was blessed to meet both Steves, and as well as my aunt worked with Wazi as well, selling Apple computers on college campuses. But Steve, the lesson I most learned from him is not zoom in, zoom out, but connecting the dots backwards and understanding pragmatically how things happen by understanding the spheres of influence, by understanding layers of influence, by understanding how to monetize things, by utilizing the consumer experience, the end experience, and connecting the dots backwards in order to not only effectuate that experience, but the monetization and value of that experience. And so some of those things, the things I learned from Skull yesterday, though, he's 81 years old. He looks like he's 61. He's, you know, a chairman and CMO of a new company that's going to be worth $100 million or more dollars, I'm sure, RX Advance. But what I learned about him is what I've learned about all the greats, about Marshall Falk yesterday, about Alicia Tillman from the global CMO of SAP, is all of these people must be what they can be. And they've learned to love what they do. They must be what they can be. If you don't feel that you must be what you can be, then you don't know your what, right? You don't know your what, and allow your what to evolve. At least know your what for today and allow your what to be multiple whats. Allow it to be different flavors of what. It doesn't matter, but you need to know your what. And those are the lessons from Jobs and Sculley. What is the process of taking inventory of your values, and what are your personal values? So taking inventory is just literally reviewing personal, experiential, giving, and receiving. My personal values change every day, but they always include health, family, integrity, character, desire, skills, knowledge. My personal values start with my health. That was the biggest transformation in the last 3 years when my wife told me if I better take care of myself, because if I take care of myself, I can take care of others. Best piece of advice I've ever heard in all the speeches, panels, movies, TVs, podcasts, radios, anything I've ever done, is that everyone should find something that they love to do for an hour a day for their health. Something that they can do every day. Best piece of advice I've ever heard beyond anything else. What makes you happiest? Making other people happy, right? Praying to God for at least 10 people that I can help. If anyone is in the depths of despair, hopelessness, even suicide, and I'm getting a lot of people asking me about that, simply shift your paradigm and go do something for someone else. It will instantly, it's the only thing I know to guarantee to start the catalytic motivation to be happy is to go help somebody else. And so that's what makes me happiness as well. How do you measure your happiness index reach? First of all, you know, counting is a man-made man-made concept. So I always use numbers as a minimum. So if I'm going to try to empower a minimum of a billion people to be happy, I do it simply by the number of people I feel that I've impacted with the capability to impact two generations down. So my math goes, if I can impact at least 1,000 people, to impact 1,000 people, to impact 1,000 people with the core values, concepts, philosophies, in order to have the perspective of learning to love everything that they do, activity they get paid for and activity they don't get paid for. That's how I measure it by the immediate context and counting of those people that I can impact that are able to empower others to empower others. So that's the closest I can come. And I love math like you, but it is man-made context. What's your favorite word and why? Kindness. Kindness for sure. Radical humility is embedded in kindness. Kind to my future self. I'd rather be kind than right. Kindness is the guidepost. It allows me to make room for what I want. And so many times, if I just would have chosen kindness over the ego-based expressions that are learned, inherent in my being, I would have been so much better off. John Hart asked, have I heard of tapping? Absolutely, I've experienced it. You know, things like tapping, you should check out. I trace calligraphies, I wear funky bracelets. my rule about, you know, spiritual woo-woo, different types of Eastern and Western philosophies, different ideas that people have to help, people that give me advice that can expand and accelerate my life to happiness. My philosophy is, one, is there any risk? So like with tapping, no risk at all, right? No risk at all to utilize tapping to clear whatever you have. And does it work? Right. And then I'm aggregating all the things that have very little risk and work very well. And I keep doing those things. So far, I've done tapping. I get better results from tracing my calligraphies, wearing my blessed bracelets, meditation. But I think in certain circumstances, I may go back to that. Jerry has a question. Thank you, Jerry. I love the idea of finding the positive in everything. Do you think there's a negative to being too much of a cheerleader to those around you who have lost their jobs or are facing intense struggles during Corona? Look, I can't control anybody else's feelings. I'm gonna remind you, I can't control anyone else's feelings. And feeling bad does not make somebody feel good. Feeling sick does not make somebody healthy, right? Being rich does not make somebody else poor. And so I have lost so much in my own life and created clouds, interference to that great connection. My job is to light as many people's candles as I can. One light, one particle of light overcomes a million particles of darkness. And I have learned that it may make somebody feel uncomfortable that you are positive. It may make somebody and perturbate them because they don't feel good. But it's okay to be positive and ask somebody that critical question. How can you be of service? Remember, the best way to make someone feel good, happiness is the greatest virus, greatest disease, most viral thing. It can happen through witnessing it. So if people are witnessing you be happy, serotonin is released in their brain and it makes them happy and it strengthens their immune system. If people think you're too much of a cheerleader, then you're not expressing your happiness and your positivity in the right way by being understanding and asking a series of questions to understand and align with how you could be of service. Look, if somebody's depressed, don't sit there and go, hey, just look at the light. You know, the world's, look at the glass half full, man, you're fine. What do you do? Why you feel so bad? You know, the world's great. No, get alignment. Ask them a series of questions. What are you doing today? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? Would it help you if, right? These are the questions that we ask. But we don't want to utilize, a resistant behavior. What we resist persists. You can't tell somebody, right, that's sitting there starving, you know, to completely make a shift. People have to lower the bar. They have to walk before they run, you know, crawl before they walk, before they run. What's my meditation look like? Daniel from Toronto. Meditation to me is always a matter of finding peace. I use theta meditation. Dr. Sangeeta Sahi, she taught it to me. It's a matter of raising my vibration. Vibration and frequency are extremely important to me. I believe you only can be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than you. The plants, the animals, humans, light, sound, light, thought vibrate faster and faster. The thought that vibrates the fastest is the truth. So I'm on a journey of enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of that truth. The reason I got involved in meditation, just so you know, I was so anti-meditation. I didn't have time for meditation. I thought that I controlled everything in my universe. The reason I started meditation is because Dr. Sangeeta Sahi said to me, you know, I can raise your awareness. I'm like, so what? She goes, actually, I can raise your awareness when to buy or sell. And that got my interest, especially now, because those are where the margins of millionaires are made, in buying low and selling high. And I've been able to elevate my awareness of when to buy low, when to see it, my capabilities synergistic and supplementary to those things that are oversold. I know that things that get oversold have more emotionally charged in their industry or in their company than any other, and they'll be overbought as well. So I know the pendulum will swing farther in those companies, and I know I can find those companies in the stock market. And I know that I cannot, if I'm not an expert at it, I can find an expert with 30 or 40 years of experience in order to tell me when they think it's oversold or overbought. All of these from meditation and awareness. So I use theta meditation. Look, meditation can be anything. Meditation to me is the peaceful state of finding your highest frequency for the day, a baseline in which you work off of so you can plateau and grow so you don't live the myth of Sisyphus. We don't want to roll a boulder up the hill every day just to have it be at the bottom tomorrow. I've never been in the best independent study. How can I learn to learn? Hey, George, great. Everybody write this down. Be more interested than interesting, right? If you get in the habit of being more interested than interesting, asking open-ended questions, and then utilizing your natural curiosity to ask closed-ended questions to learn more, and then make it a practice to find the best sources, to find the best answers according to people who sit in the situation that you want to be in so you can have accelerated knowledge. You don't have to pay the dummy tax yourself, right? We don't have to go to the Encyclopedia Britannica anymore and use a digest system in order to facilitate finding an answer that used to take me longer to find the answer than to read the answer. Now, I love the fact it takes me longer to read the answer than to find it. It used to take me longer to find the answer than to learn the answer. I love the fact that I can learn the answer. It takes longer to learn it now than to find it. That's a really good thing. So be more interested than interesting. Make it a habit, and you will find that you have now habits of how to learn. Ask for help from those mentors and experts that sit in the situation that you want to be in. How to ask others you look up to for advice and guidance in your career path. This is really funny because I was told at a young age, treat your friends like your bosses and your bosses like your friends. And what that really meant to me is you have to be able to ask for what you want from the people that have it, right? Make them feel good. Remind yourself every time you ask someone for help or ask someone for something, remind yourself how good you feel when somebody asks you for help and you're able to do it. Remind yourself of that and tell yourself, I'm going to give this person an opportunity to feel really good about themselves. I'm going to give them an opportunity to be happy, and other people that witness it and hear of it will be happy as well. I'm going to allow this person who sits in a situation that I want to be in, somebody that you portray as being, you know, higher up or superior to you. No, they're not. Make yourself equal and then make yourself different from your situation, either by time, value, or emotion. You're in a different position. But remember, you know, my little brother used to do this. He's 5 years younger than me, and he would always compete with who I am today with who he was today. And I'm like, what the heck are you doing, bro? Like, you're so more successful than I am. You have it so much more together than I. You're just comparing your 21-year-old self in college to my 26-year-old self, or your 26-year-old self to my 31. I think the only time that he felt good about that competition is in 2008 when I lost everything, right? Now I can give people situational knowledge and experience on how to deal with a crisis, how to learn to love what you do, how to make more money, help more people, and have more fun, how to start, take inventory, utilize this time for the margins of millionaires, why more millionaires are made in the depression, how to come back quickly, how to get focused and connect the dots backwards, all these different things that we're trying to do here on the road to revenue, starting with learning to love what you do by deciphering the difference between inspiration and motivation, by deciphering activity into what you love about the activity and what you're going to learn to love by finding the light, love, and lessons in it, or finding an expert to help you with it to make it enjoyable, looking for the capabilities that will make it enjoyable so you do love it. Puneeth, I have an advertising agency. I want to reach the bigger brands who can pay me more. How can I reach them? Okay. Well, there's a variety of ways to reach them, but I would use sponsors and power sponsors. If you're not asking every day, hey, do you know someone that works for a major corporation that is in charge of this? You're making a big mistake, because you never know who those sponsors and power sponsors are. If you're not more interested than interesting in doing the research of the sponsors and power sponsors and what they're involved with and how you can get to meet those sponsors and power sponsors or even decision makers, if you're not doing that and putting yourself in the position to be around the people who can help you specifically work with the bigger brands, if you're not around that, how are you gonna get there? If you're not asking for it, how are you gonna get there? Look, you can reverse engineer that. I used to go specifically, look, I do a lot for charity, philanthropy. I have and do, I get to go to a ton of different charitable events, I'd reverse engineer a lot of the charitable events by the people that I wanted to meet. I'd look always, if I'm going to a charitable event, I'm always looking at who's on the board of directors, who's volunteering, who's entertaining, all the different things, so that I know that I'm putting myself in the spheres of influence in order to be able to ask the sponsors and power sponsors within the context of that event to get to what I want. Right? Nothing wrong with it. It wasn't manipulating, literally, it's just strategically connecting the dots backwards, putting myself in a position to love what I do and get what I want. Let me see here. How would you define value, and can you redefine giving values and receiving values? Look, value is quantitative to me. All right, listen to me. When I'm doing executive coaching, I think about doing group coaching because there's so many people demanding it. I'm looking for quantitative value, a number, right? A number of people, a number of money, a number of time, a quantitative health measure, like losing weight, 10 pounds. I'm looking for quantitative value. Knowing one thing, giving and receiving are one. You can't give what you don't have. If everything comes through you like the superpower battery of solar power for appreciation, giving and receiving are one. Until you can clear the clouds between the two, you'll never experience the full acceleration and expansion of the power of giving. Power of giving is happiness. Happiness is the greatest virus of all time. When you give, serotonin is released. When you receive, serotonin is released. And when people witness giving and receiving, serotonin is released and it makes you happy. There's biochemical chemistry measurement to prove it, scientific measurement. But giving and receiving are the same. And I want everyone here to work on that and realize when we're asking for help, we're giving and receiving. When we're receiving help, we're giving and receiving. They're one, right? It's creating and making room for what you want by giving away what you have. That's why we ask two series of questions. The series of questions of how you can provide value of service and the series of questions of how you can receive value of service. And those values are quantitative, not subjective. There is subjective value in everything. This is one thing I hate about introductions, right? So many people, I'm the connector, I'm the introducer. I'm like, you're Barney, bro. You're a big purple dinosaur. I love you. You love me. Nobody makes any money. Tick-tack, daddy-whack, I'm going to go broke. Pisses me off if you can't hear it in my voice. I'm dead serious. Barney bullshit introductions, don't do them. You purple dinosaurs. Quantitative value, that's what I'm talking about. Organic, credible introductions that result in profit. Quantitative value. That's what we're looking for. There's subjective purple dinosaur bullshit in everything, right? It's perfect for your kids to watch cartoons with, but it's not going to pay your bills. And it's not worth your time. And you're not going to love to do it as much as you will anything else, the activity you get paid for and activity you don't. If you want to do activity you get paid for, then go watch Barney and hang out with him and feel really good about things. That's terrific. But I'm into making money to help people and make them happy. All right, you got me fired up here with 10 minutes left. Sorry. And I apologize about my voice. Quantumly, I have the second worst voice in the entire world next to my brother, Scott, whose birthday is today, who actually, when singing one time, a little girl went like this, 5 years old, while he's singing. So I apologize right off the bat. All right, once you get that motivation, how do you keep the momentum of inspiration going without slipping? First of all, you're good to slip. Right? And so you have to acknowledge and illuminate that you're going to slip. Because if we're not slipping, we're not going to learn any more lessons. And every lesson that we learn, we're going to forget, but we have the power to remember the lesson. So you have to anticipate slipping. And that's why options are so important. That's why not limiting our point of entry. That's why asking for help. That's why saving is so important. Not just saving money, but saving time. See, all the things that we can create repositories for are important because it allows us to slip so we don't fall too far. It allows us to plateau and grow that we're not living the myth of Sisyphus where the ball rolls down every single day. Every single day. No, we live and utilize and student of our calendar, attention plus intention, the coincidence. We do things now. We practice ending fear. We ask and attract. And most importantly, take inventory of those values, knowing that we are inspired to clear those clouds and that, yes, new clouds will come and we'll slip. That's okay, because it just means I got a lesson to learn. And the more pain or more rain that comes on me, it's just an indicator that I haven't learned the lesson. Once I learn the lesson, the cloud will go away, and so will the rain and the pain. Mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, and financial pain, it'll go away. It's just lessons. So to learn to love what we do, we have to learn to love the clouds. We have to learn to love the synergy and supplemental capabilities that we have to those clouds in order to effectuate and detach our emotions from the clouds and attach the man-made construct of time. Never put a time limit on when I want to move the cloud. Just say the cloud is there for a reason and a purpose, and it will leave it the right way at the perfect time when I learn that lesson. What fun would it be if we knew everything? What fun would it be? You wouldn't be here. People ask me all the time, hey, this whole vibration thing, how come, you know, people that are mediums and can see things, how come they don't just win the lottery? Look, if they had that type of awareness, they wouldn't be here. Why? Because this would be a boring effing place to be if you could win the lottery or pick six every day or know who's going to win the Super Bowl. That's boring, right? We're on journeys to consistently, every day, persistently enjoy the pursuit of our potential, not live our potential. We wouldn't be here. There's a higher vibrating place where all of that exists. I'm just not ready to go there yet. I'm not afraid of it. How do you build belief in yourself without feeding your ego? Number one, acknowledge and define what the ego is, right? The ego is separation. The ego is the needs that I listed out previously. And so building belief, or practicing is a better word than building, practicing belief in yourself should be mutually exclusive to your ego. Practicing building belief in yourself should be the practice of overcoming ego, practice ending ego. Practice ending fear will be the practice of building beliefs. So when we can acknowledge those, and then when they come about, stop, drop, and roll, because we know when we're an ego-based consciousness that our mind, body, and soul are on fire. And so when we sit there with our mind, body, and soul on fire, stop, ask yourself, why do I feel this way? What it, identify what ego-based emotion it is, and then drop. Breathe through your nose, out through your mouth. Try to find some clarity until you get to center neutrality, the higher frequency that's your baseline for the day that hopefully you got at the beginning of the day. And then roll in the trajectory of what you want. Activity you get paid for, or something that you love to do, or that you learn to love to do. Let me give this quick story at the end. Some of you have heard this before, but it's one of my favorite, and it clearly defines this process that's so important. I work out, wake up every day at 4 a.m., meditate for 20 minutes, get ready for 10, and I have activity for my health for a minimum of an hour from 4:30 to 5:30. On a Saturday, before the quarantine, I went outside at 4:30 to go to the gym, and I noticed that my daughter's car, my 17-year-old's daughter's car, was missing. I immediately went into an extreme state of ego-based emotion called fear. But it projected itself into anger. So I grabbed my phone immediately. I'm going to call and start swearing at my 17-year-old daughter. I'm so mad. My mind, my body, and soul were on fire. And I was about to explode on her. And then I remembered what I teach. I remembered what I teach. That great lesson to stop, drop, and roll. So I stopped. And I asked myself, why are you so angry? And I said, because I'm afraid. I'm afraid for one of the closest people in my life that I'm responsible for. And I have some fear, not only for her, but what other people will think of me and what I kind of father I am and all these other dumb thoughts of ego, creating more clouds, more interference from that beautiful sunlight to go into the superpower solar battery that I am. And I started to breathe. And just 20 minutes earlier, I was at a higher state, a higher frequency of centralized neutrality of allowance. And I got to that place again, right back up to that higher frequency. And I called my daughter. She answered. And instead of screaming superlative F words at her and attacking her with attacking thoughts, like normal fathers would, or I would just previous, I literally said, hey, sweetheart, where are you? She said, I'm in bed. I'm like, where? In our house. Where's your car? Oh, I left it because you told me when kids were drinking that I should Uber home instead of drive. Now, I'm smart enough to know what kids drinking means. I know my daughter was drinking, but that's what I told her to do. From the years of experience and wisdom and situational knowledge and dummy tax that I've paid. So I said to her, I said, oh, good. I'm so proud of you. Thank you so much. Sorry for waking you. And she said, that's okay, Daddy. I love you, and hung up. Why is that so important? Because it's one of the clearest examples of how the ego can ruin your life, how you can create so many more clouds of rain and pain that you can't even imagine. Because if I didn't learn how to stop, drop, and learn, and stop, drop, and roll, if I didn't learn to love everything that I do, if I didn't learn to see that I'm connected to the greatest light, the greatest source of energy, love, and lessons, that I am the solar battery of appreciation, that I am always connected to the sun, if I didn't realize that, I would have called her, screamed at her, attacked her. She would attack me back. I would have punished her. She wouldn't have been able to drive her car. And the next time that she drove her car and the kids were drinking, she would have went right back into her car and drove home because she didn't want to get in trouble. And God knows what would have happened. Whole bunch of rain, whole bunch of pain, a whole bunch of clouds. If you don't think what I'm teaching here is important to learn to love what you do, to understand how we create those clouds, the rain and the pain in your life, and it's just a matter of learning the lessons and to smile through the struggle and to realize you are in the middle of a miracle full of margins for millionaires, then we're missing the point. Certainly appreciate everybody joining me today for this hour. We're going to do it every Friday. I'm just so grateful. Please, if you haven't joined my text community, it's 949-298-2905. My personal email is for everyone, david@dmeltzer.com. All know where to follow me at David Meltzer. Thank you for going live with me, joining me. I look forward to next Friday. Have a happy and healthy week. Most importantly, learn to love what you do by being kind to your future self and doing good deeds. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend. Love you all.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of The Playbook, but more importantly, I want you to join my text community. I'm doing a lot of fun things there, one-on-one conversations, trainings, giveaways, and it's the first place I release all of the information that I'm giving. So join me at my text platform, 949-298-2905. That's 949-298-2905. Join my exclusive community.